Okay, so I believe we have everyone here who is able to make it today. So I will go ahead and call the meeting to order. Thank you guys for coming. We can go ahead and start with roll call. Does the staff typically do that or should I do that?
I can take care of it. Maribel Alvarez.
Present.
Vanessa Gallego.
Present.
Trey Devon Rhodes is absent. John Aitken, absent. Robert Jaramillo.
Present.
Raquel Abel.
Present.
Ed Hendel.
Present.
We have quorums.
Thank you very much. Okay, next item is approval of the minutes from both August 28th and September 9th. So if anyone would like to make a motion for that, or if there's discussion items first, any revisions that need to be made.
I'd like to make a motion to approve the minutes that submitted.
I second that motion.
Okay, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear the motion. Was it to approve both of them? Or, okay, thank you. All right, do we have any discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion passes. Okay, next item is call to the audience. However, I don't see anyone, so we'll skip that. If people come, we'll try to get them in at the end. Okay, so we'll move on to item 4. Consideration and discussion of the history, demographic, and population data. And then we'll have our discussion. So maybe we'll start with the history. So the staff, thank you so much for preparing the history that you put together. That's great stuff. And we'd love for you to maybe kind of walk us through it, or if you had any highlights that we should be aware of, this would be a good time for that, please.
That'll be me.
Hey, Chair.
So, this was kind of slapped together in the period of about a day and a half. We had to run through our record center and pull the files for the last almost 100 years. I won't read it. No, it was quick work. So I won't read through this verbatim. I'll just touch on some of the points. If you have questions, you can ask. If you want any additional information, as we go through this, let me know and I'll make a note of it and pull that. So the city charter, it was ratified March 29th by the mayor and council. It was approved by the governor of Arizona in 1930. Section 8 of the charter divided the city into 6 wards, each of them containing as nearly as possible the same number of registered voters. So we're looking at total voters now. At that time, it was registered voters. The records between 1930 and really the early 70s, there's a few more records in the 50s and 60s, but there's a big gap in the records between especially 30 and 56. So there's not a whole lot for that first meeting or that first redistricting. We don't have a map, for example. We don't have our first map until 1956. What we do have is a description of the original ward boundaries, and that's in there for you in the case that you're interested. We don't know, and I'm sure with some research we could find what the map of Tucson looked like in 1930 and use this guide to delineate the ward boundaries. We don't have a map from the 1930s in our redistricting file, so we didn't try to do that. The interesting point to note is the population of the original wards, and we have to do a little bit of extrapolation there. Because we don't have a breakdown for that redistricting, or yeah, where would that be districting? Anyways, we know what the total population was per the census and divided that by six. So it comes to about 5,418 people per ward. And what's interesting about that is now the ideal ward population is 90,393. So that's about a 1,000, I think Jesus did the math on this, a 1,568.3% increase in the size of the ward since their creation. One of the questions that was put to us was the number of redistrictings that have occurred since 1932, which was the first scheduled redistricting. And because of that gap, we don't know exactly what that was. Again, what we had to do is look at the language of the original of the charter, which called for quadrennial redistricting. So based on that, it wasn't until, and I guess I'll get there, but it wasn't until, what was that, 93? Well, when they established the current redistricting schedule. So was it 93 or 97 that went into effect in 2000? So prior to 2000, the redistricting schedule was quadrennial, beginning with 1932. So 32, 36, 40, so on and so forth. So based on that, there were approximately 26 redistrictings. Now, what happened between 1930 and 56, whether they missed one? So up until 1993 is when the mayor and council created the redistricting advisory committee. Prior to that, the mayor and council were doing the redistricting work themselves, which might account for the condition of the files prior to 1993, because from 93 onwards, everything's there. The demographics, the population data, the census, raw census data, it's all there. Prior to that, not so much. They also spent years on redistricting prior to that, where in 93 onwards, there was a finite amount of time set by the mayor and council for this work to happen. Prior to 93, they often started a year before the redistricting year and worked a year or two prior before they came up with any decisions. So this stuff was spread out. Ward population growth percentage, we hit that. There's a list of notable recent changes to redistricting. That includes the 93 ordinance that established the redistricting advisory committee, the 1997 ordinance that created the current redistricting schedule, 2022 ordinance that added a rough proportionality as a consideration, and this recent 2024 ordinance that added additional language for the consideration of the disruption of the wards. What you have continuing onward are basically bits and pieces of stuff that stood out in the historical record that we had. Ward maps, and you can see, the earliest ward map was 53, not 56. And some events that occurred between then and now. There was a big boom in population in Tucson. I believe it was the biggest population increase in a decade from 1950 to 1960. Population grew from 45,000 to 213,000 in that one decade alone. I'm going to say that we didn't see many changes affecting redistricting following that. There was a lawsuit in 64, but it kind of carried on through 67. We don't have the outcome of that lawsuit. So we have the original filing. We have a restraining order that was put to the city of Tucson, preventing them from moving forward with redistricting. And that was, let me just refresh my memory. Oh, and that had to do with them redistricting based on voter registration and not total population. And actually in redistrictings that took place once or twice before this year, there were citizenry that spoke up and said, hey, you should be using the total population. They didn't. They finally, a lawsuit was filed. And so in the subsequent redistricting of 72, they're using total population and not just the registered voters. There's some population sporadically peppered throughout just to show you how the city of Tucson was growing through the years. In 73, there was a lawsuit, another lawsuit, Robert Royale versus or Royal versus the mayor and council of the city of Tucson. The city wanted to redistrict 45,500 people from three wards. And a resident developed his own map that showed you could meet the kind of MPD. They were using 10%. Since the 50s as a measure of equalization of the wards. So this particular resident put his map together and showed that you could move 1/7 of those 45,500 people and achieve an MPD under 10%. He took the city to court. He won. Basically, the judgment was you have 14 or 20 days to come up with a map of your own that reflects 1/7 of the population. Sorry, Suzanne.
No, I was just going to say the name Robert Royal sounded familiar to me. He was a council member at that time.
Oh, okay. Probably why he knew how to draw up a map. So the city had the option of drawing up their own map that reflected a change of 1/7 of the population, fell under 10% MPD, or they were going to defer to Mr. Royal's map. They didn't. They deferred to a city map, but.
So a city council member sued the city?
I guess so. I didn't know. I saw another. Yeah. I deferred to my boss.
Unless that was a different Robert Royal. But
yeah,
he was on the council for several years.
And it would have to be a really knowledgeable person because they went and redrew the map on their own. So. You know how complex that is.
And the judge ruled that minimizing disruption was.
So there is another point to this. That 45,500 people were being moved word-wise was a secondary issue. The big issue was they were being disenfranchised from their vote because there was a primary that was coming up shortly after this, and none of those 45,500 people would have been allowed to vote in it. That was the primary reason that was, affected. It was the 45,500 when you could have done a seventh of that, but that was a secondary reason, yeah. And the rest of the information you have, basically some population data and maps through 2010, there is an awful lot of records for the years 88 really and forward. So as you deliberate, if you want particular population data that's more in detail, demographic data, that stuff that we can pull, there's a lot of material and it would take time. So, but we have, just so you know, if you're looking for records previous to 76, that'll be a bigger task.
Well, thank you so much for putting this together. This is fantastic work. And it's very helpful to us. I mean, you can see all the wards have grown quite drastically. So each city council member is representing like 10 times more people now. So thanks again. Great presentation. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, yes, all praise to Robert and the city clerk's office. I just wanted to very briefly add three little legal wrinkles or things that I just remember since I've been working on this for a long time. One of the things connected with the quadrennial redistricting since 32 was that at that time, the city, I think, essentially ran its own voter registry. It knew who was registered, and that was one of the things they did. Now we use county data, right? And which in turn is census data. That's one point. We don't do our own voter registration rolls anymore. And then two points on the history. Exactly as Robert said, it was in the 60s that, first of all, they started challenging voter registered voters as opposed to total population. That started being questioned as early as like 66. So it's clear why there was this shift going on. The other thing was also in the 60s, that's when we get MPD, that it's one person, one vote, and that you've got to have a relatively equivalent weight under the Equal Protection Clause for state and local redistrictings. That's all I wanted to say.
Thank you very
great,
much.
Again, great job by Robert and the clerk.
I'm curious if we know why the rough proportionality that was implemented as a guideline in 2022 is for only voting age instead of total population, whereas the other metrics are based on total population. I'm just curious if we know.
I'm not sure I know why that was. That was what was determined, but I simply don't know. Sorry.
Fair enough. That's all right. We can ask our council members. I think some of them helped implement that. So, okay. Any questions or thoughts about historical documents?
Just a quick comment. From looking back, it seems to me that when the city has a metric that it has to meet, it meets it very adequately, all the way going back to the era before civil rights legislation. You know, you have to have one vote, you know, their proportion, they are sort of similar. You can see the words pretty equal in population. So it seems like when you have a metric, we know what to do. But when it came to minority packing certain districts, because there's no metric, rough proportionality can be that metric if we advance that. But short of that, that was not a consideration. So you could have, over time, a slow process where the minority population was concentrated to the point that I think it's something I hope we talk about a lot, that the way that legal scholars, and I'm not one, but I've been doing some homework, Loyola Marymount and ACLU and a bunch of things, just trying to wrap my head around it. Seems to me that one of the arguments is that when you pack, you dilute. The dilution of the voting power of a minority group comes as a result of the packing, because you are then preventing that representation of that group from having a voice in what would be the larger jurisdictions of the city, as opposed to the particularity of the neighborhoods or the areas where they live. And that took a while for me to understand the relationship of almost like two sides of the same sheet, you know, like packing conlleva. I was just thinking Spanish. Packing leads to dilution, and that the rough proportionality could be a remedy to that if it establishes that as a metric, which now the council has approved. But it's pretty clear that short of having that metric as imposed. We were not doing a good job of monitoring that over the last several census data. So I just wanted to me that that's a really revealing behavior from the, which is a good thing. I mean, we do what we're told to do. And when we don't, we're not, we don't tell ourselves what to do, things can slip.
As a data scientist, I completely agree. I like to have concrete metrics and numbers, so I'm with you there. Any other thoughts on the historical aspect before we move on to, I guess item four is kind of three different pieces, so.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair, I need to correct myself. Robert Royal was not a council member at the time. He was a council, he was out of office by then. So,
okay.
Not sure what was going on then, but just wanted to correct the record.
That makes sense. So the city wasn't suing itself, but he had a history and knew how to do this kind of stuff. Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Well, with that, I mean, we don't, it's all within item four. It's just kind of a bigger discussion, but the next two pieces are just discussing all the data we have and long-term planning would be the next piece. So at the next meeting, if we're able to come to an agreement at that time, we're going to try to put together our recommendation for mayor and council, which, just to remind everybody, is not going to include any maps for redistricting. It'll just be any recommendations regarding process or timelines for 2028. So we can talk about that now. I just want to say one quick thing first, which is that you guys hear a lot about, like, oh, in 2022, we did this, we did that, this happened, that happened. I do want to make sure we do have two new members here today, and also Trey, who's not here, but you know, about half of our committee is the same as 2022, but we also have new people, and I don't want you two to feel like, you know, you're behind, or like, you know, if you have any questions, there's like no stupid questions, right? We all learned it last time, but you know, I just want to make sure everyone feels empowered to speak their mind, and please don't feel like you're, you know, slowing us down or something if you don't know something that happened last time. Each one of us was chosen by our city councilor, and we're all equally important. So just want to say that. And with that, I'll just open it up for discussion on the demographic and population data. This can just be open-ended. We can go anywhere we want. So if you have any thoughts.
May I have a clarification? So the next scheduled redistricting is not till what, 2028?
Yeah, that's correct.
Thank you.
And I believe Robert mentioned that the city council, when they did this themselves, they would take like a year to do it. I think in 2022, we felt the same way, that trying to do this in a couple months was not realistic if you were going to be making really big major changes. So I think most likely that will probably be part of our recommendation to mayor and council, would be to start the process earlier.
I wanted to ask about 2020, if the clerk can clarify. I have the document of the recommendation from the committee, and they had a proposal. They had option A, option B, and they had specifically outlined the impact on minority populations, trying to get to proportionality, rough proportionality. But I believe that was rejected. That, can you tell us a little bit about what happened when the committee in 2020 recommended option A and B, and then what was the action? Because I believe that it wasn't what the committee recommended would happen.
I have my recollection, but do you want to, you might know better.
It's probably better than mine.
Okay. Well, I emailed the staff about this a few weeks ago, and we got clarification on which of the two items was approved. So this part I'm not completely certain about, but I think the redistricting committee suggested both. They gave them two options. The mayor and council chose one of them. I'm not sure how final that was. I don't think it was officially voted on. I'm not completely sure, but they in some way indicated which one they preferred. And then a lot of people got mad, packed the public hearing and had protests and stuff. And then the city council changed their mind and went with the other option that was less disruptive. Please correct me, staff, if I'm mistaken, but that's my recollection from looking into it. Okay, we're seeing some nodding.
I think that is what happened, and we can provide that material to you tomorrow so that you've got the proposal by the committee and the vote by the mayor, the action by the mayor and council.
I think we have that already, actually.
It should be in your binder, but yeah.
Let me look in the historical. I just remember when we got our original binder, it wasn't clear which of the two was passed, but now we have clarification on that. And then in 2022, some of the same precincts were considered to move, and the same groups protested, and kind of the same thing happened. Although at that time, in 2022, it didn't get to the mayor and council. They came and protested us instead of waiting until the RAC got there. Yeah, that's good. I mean, that's what we're for. I think they had like a press conference right outside, and there were a lot of people filling out the seats there. It's funny to see zero people now.
And I think in 2022, we were caught in the dilemma that the mandate that we had said that we had to privilege least disruption. And having the community members feel that that was severe disruption and not having the metric adopted, it was hard for us to not support that, because we were trying to achieve another objective, but that wasn't even, but now council has changed that, mayor and council have changed that. Hypothetically, if we were to do this, which we're not going to do it this year, but if we were, we could have more wiggle room, or a future committee would have more wiggle room of saying, yes, it disrupts you, but it also meets this other overcharging, overriding objective, which has already been found by council to be important. That hypothetically would have not made people happy, but would have given a reasonable basis to go against the public, which we didn't feel, I think, that we really had that in 22 in good faith. That still wouldn't mean that the public would be happy or understand the principle. And I think that's where we come down to, what can the council do? You know, it's like when you have kids and you want them to do something, you want them to believe that it was their idea. So it's almost like the same thing, like how would you get the populace to the point where what they want is rough proportionality? I mean, that's an education process.
Educational piece, that's what I was going to say.
Right?
And I think that's a crucial point, because if you're going to make a decision that's going to affect the community, I feel that they should have or should be heard and then go from there. And that, you know, they have to have the buy-in. Otherwise, they're going to be knocking at your door all day. And, you know, and we can sit here and go around in circles, and which the next scheduled redistrict is not till 2028, and we can make our recommendation, because by then, I don't know if any of us are going to be a part of that committee, and they're going to have their ideas. So I don't know if it would just be wise just to submit our letter of recommendation as we see or agree on and go from there. This is my 2 cents worth.
Yeah, thank you. I'll just say I think community education is a good idea. Mm-hmm. But in the same spirit, I would like to have, you know, listening sessions where people can talk to the city council. And I sort of, you know, the city council is supposed to represent the will of the people that they were elected by. So I don't, you know, community education is great, and I'll certainly support that. But it shouldn't always just be like the council trying to convince the public that they want something that they currently don't want. Their education's great. There can be some aspect of that if the council feels that the community is misunderstanding some key concepts. That's certainly fair. But I think at least as much there should be listening to the people out in the community. And if they want a certain policy, then, you know, it would be incumbent on their elected leaders to try to enact that as a democracy, right? That's my perspective, personally.
I agree.
Yes, I agree with that. But right now, the city of Tucson is majority Hispanic or minority. Is it?
It's 43%. Yeah, we had the number. It's definitely not majority. It's 42.something%, I believe. Okay.
For the rough proportionality concept, the minority, the Hispanic or population is concentrated really high in Ward 1 and 5, and the others are not representative of that. In other words, if you wanted to be crass and just call it like white or Hispanic, you could just say 2 districts are Hispanic, 4 are white, and that doesn't reflect the balance of the rest of the city. It's not 42%. That's what the proportionality is. So that hypothetically, there should be a third district, a third ward that could have a majority. You would have to lower the Hispanic population on 1 and 5 and distribute it to another district adjacent, because you can't completely like draw some crazy map. That's part of the mandate. Adjacent district that would take a little bit from 5, a little bit from 3, balance those out at less than, 80% or whatever they are now. And that's where, that would meet that principle. That then the city would have 3 districts that have the majority of the minority, right? The majority of minority being able to be represented. So that's where this unbalance is right now by the numbers. But what we found out was that even Hispanic population, because we saw that from Ward 1 and 5, were feeling that actually to break that was actually diluting. And they were using the word diluting the Hispanic block power. And while it is true that in some cases representation by getting a large majority of people really is important, that's when that mental loop happened of packing is actually diluting. But they were using diluting in the sense like you're breaking, you're taking voters, Latino voters out of Ward 5. Mm-hmm. You know, your council member and from 1. So you're breaking these coalitions of voters. But from the bigger picture, breaking those coalitions meant you're giving more Hispanic power and voice to other districts, which then brings more proportional. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, it's really hard. I found that it was what I want to tell council, and I don't know how we will write this, said somehow you have to go from that being simply an intellectual argument, because even intellectually it's hard to grasp. It has to go from being an intellectual argument to being a value that these communities see, oh, I understand it now. I will actually be stronger in my voice as a minority voter if there's more. But for that, it means that from my very engorged district, I give a little so that another one can. But that I found was too much of a leap. It's only rational. It wasn't emotional. Mm-hmm. It wasn't value-based. People didn't get it. And so that was just very hard to do. Like, I'm doing this for your good. It sounded almost like that. And you know how communities react when you tell them, I'm doing it for your own good, but you don't get it. It was just, I felt anti-democratic, like you said it.
Yeah. And people, I mentioned this last time, but I thought it was interesting that people were using the term dilution to mean sort of opposite things. There was, you know, some people, you know, would say dilution is putting, you know, the majority of the, or not the majority, but having only two majority minority wards is diluting the minority vote, which makes sense, certainly. But then the people at the hearing were all saying, you're trying to dilute our block of power within our ward by breaking up the barrios and moving some into Ward 3 or moving some out of Ward 5. I think we heard that as well. So it's sort of diluting on what scale? Are you diluting within neighborhoods or within a ward or within the whole city? And different people had different priorities. Some people were thinking citywide. Some people were thinking about their own ward. Some people were thinking about the park across from their house that they want to. I remember some of them were saying, like, we want to stay in the same ward as this park that we all go to so that we have more control over the budgeting for the park maintenance and things like that. So it's just everyone's thinking on a different scale. I thought that was interesting and certainly hard to parse. By the way, I just looked it up. We've confirmed it's 42.2% of the voting age population in Tucson is minority, which is defined as anything except for white alone, which in the census is a category that essentially means you're not partially some other race. You know, you can have multiple races, but if you are white alone, you're, that's one category, and then anything else besides that is minority. And so that minority is 42.2% among the voting age population. So rough proportionality right now, 33% of our wards are majority minority. So we're, you know, we are about 10%, 9% too low. So if you were to put it to three of the six, you'd be at 50%, slightly overshooting. So it's because we have only six wards, you can't actually get the math to work out perfectly. If we had 20 wards, this rough proportionality would be easier.
How did you solve that problem? I'm asking my fellow committee members, like, where did you go from there?
So I'm very ignorant about this, but I'm not clear why it matters if it's all citywide voting anyway. Is it because of your council person?
That's a good point. Yeah, we do have a sort of unusual system, but the primaries are just within the ward. Okay. And then the whole city votes on the election in the general election. So in Tucson right now, all six of the city council members plus the mayor are in the Democratic Party. And so the primary is kind of where the action is in some sense. Not that the general is not important, but you know, it's often not that close in the general. So I think that's kind of where the impact would come from.
One Democrat versus.
Right, exactly.
I want to begin as a new commissioner. In seeing it from the seeing it from 2022, y'all dealt with a lot, and me coming on to here, it was scary, in the sense that y'all were dealing with people's real fear of losing power and the perception, and so I do echo that we need to continue that education. But I think where do we go from here is that empowerment to continue to feel that there's growth within the community. My business was right outside the redistricting. And I heard a lot from my neighbors, from both business and residents. And one of the things that would echo was, and you mentioned it, it was like my park, right? Like how can my voice not give to that park if I'm not part of that? And, you know, and I think and it's simple. I told my neighbor, I was like, well, it doesn't stop you from giving that input. You're just not, the means are different, right? But there was a real fear with that person, was just like, how, I'm not going to be able to be part of this community. So it's like, how do we empower this community to feel like, no, you're still part of this and it's more. So as I see here and how right now we're not moving, we're not redistricting, but in 2028, how do we prepare those communities to be like, this might be your future neighbor, you know, in a different way, right? How do we prepare those communities to be like, start thinking of growth, right? Because that is coming down the pipeline, that's coming from us, right? And how do we empower them to feel like you're going to be part, and this is going to be like we're saying here, what we're saying we want to happen. How do we do that? So as I sit here, it's just like, this is a huge task, and luckily we're not tasked in redistricting. So we have the fun part, right? I guess I should say, where we get to inspire and put that vision, right? So then when whoever sits here in 2028, we've done that legwork and fed hope, you know, and positivity. That's where I can add with that, because it is a lot to take in. I want to say thank you so much for the historical point of view. That's a lot. So thank you for that effort and investment in doing that. So I'll end with that.
I feel that the word should be out now rather than have to wait till later. I feel if we keep people in the dark, or they feel like they're being kept in the dark, that's not good. So if we, with our recommendation, is start now reaching out to your communities out there that's going to be affected or may not be affected. Also, of the 42%, do we take into consideration, I know that we brought it up, how many of those are registered voters?
We know. It's actually not whether it's registered, it's whether they're voting age. So
voting age, I know voting age.
Yeah.
But
I don't know the registered number, but the rough proportionality principle as written specifies voting age, yeah. Whether or not they're actually registered.
Yeah.
I think the data that we got.
I think. Because I think that's a big part of the equation to come up with an answer. Because it's just. If that's not going to be taken into consideration, or it's not currently taken into consideration, I think that's not right.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't think we have that data of registered voters by ward. Do we have that, or is that known? I wonder if there's differences.
We can bring up the county recorder's website, which only has active registered voters by ward.
Okay, that'd be great.
If Brandon doesn't mind sharing his screen.
Thank you.
The vote of some will affect the outcome for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why I feel the piece of the education and getting the word out sooner, why it's important to get registered and to vote. So it can be an inclusive process, not just a handful of people making the decision for all.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that there's, we have designations that we like Tucson to have, you know, with City of Gastronomy and, you know, the book festival is the third largest in the United States. You know, I mean, it's like all those really nice things. One designation we now have by default is that we're one of the top, 20 or whatever American cities mm-hmm. where there is a phenomenon of packing, that there's no rough proportionality in our wards. I mean, that's not a good designation. It simply means that we have a community where there is, over time, a slow concentration of minorities in certain areas. And that the logic in the language, which I really like, was that that prevents that voice from having more of a jurisdictional impact in the larger city. So it is true that your park may be very particularly well cared for because you're advocating for the park, but you know there's that other park that is getting the nicer pool and that is getting the other resources, and you don't have proportionally a voice for your community necessarily in the same way that you have in relationship to your park. So the danger with that is that it eventually is like you're very powerful, but you're also very segregated in the resources that are allowed to you. So you have that park, but you don't have the same voice on that other park. It happens to be the dark part is in district and ward, six or three. So those arguments are almost like you need something where people eventually will understand that core principle of, yes, my interests are in the entire the representation across the city. But that's what you were saying, that that's how we were speaking about it. But that's not how people were feeling it. And I don't, being a professor and all, I would think, if we had a task force or a report or somebody did a report that explained that, but that's never changed anybody's mind, More paper that says that's the outcome, this is what we mean. Have to be more of almost a commitment to do some within this city's clerk's office or somewhere, a process of real community input, community education, workshops, through explain some of the basic history, the basic terms of what the legislation means. It's almost like 101, not in a way of influencing that, but of saying, did you know that this is what happens? Do you know that this happened in this other city and that this is how they were impacted by that? Because we don't have any of that. And again, I don't know that there's any part of the city right now that would be empowered or funded, certainly probably not the clerk's office, to run that entire, multi-year education campaign with workshops and slide deck and, that went around just doing this sort of democratic education. That's a big ask for the council, but it's almost like the only solution,
I just want to quickly ask staff, is that true that Tucson is one of the 20 most packed cities in the country? I hadn't heard that. Is that known is Tucson known for being, I just hadn't heard that before. Oh. Okay. Okay, so we don't know on that.
I do think that education is essential, and we may not have funds to do, you know, massive public education in the form of meetings, but I think that we could do things like put this history online and put other things online, and then try to encourage more community meetings to discuss and have commentary about the history of it. And starting it sooner rather than right before would allow for education as the population grows and as people start to become more aware of the impact of population growth.
Absolutely, thank you.
Sometimes research still works. You know, like people are really excited in the neighborhoods about the racist covenants, and that work came from the university. It was well documented. It was a database. It provided examples. And now you see neighborhood after neighborhood sort of in talking about that and doing that. So I think that there people are still very willing to respond and to be educated and to be active if it comes to in a form that explains the issues of power and the issues of fear and exclusion. I think that could work. Again, I don't know which, when we write our letter to the council, I don't know which, that is our responsibility to say which department does that, but I know that in transportation, for example, you spend years doing surveys and things with people just trying to get information of the impact of something. You go to events, you gather surveys, you do presentations, you know, like, and I wonder if this process could be modeled after some of those efforts.
I beat you.
Go ahead.
No. I think that's exactly what I was thinking as well, you know, that engagement, and you mentioned transportation. Yes. I think that's an investment that we need to do in our community. And when we talk about addressing fears like that, that's a great way to start. And where I don't know where it would lay, right? But I know that it begins with, you know, saying here that we value that, that we think that Tucson deserves it, and the value has long something that we can't put a price on, and that's the pride that we're building, that camaraderie between wards in a different way. And that excites me in the way that we can really put that, like, some type of allocation of funds. And again, I don't know where this lays, but that it can come from here and grow into something. And I like the idea of where you were saying a form of engagement as a way of department does for the better good of Tucson.
Thank you.
I think there were it should start with neighborhood associations.
Yeah.
Getting the word out to them, because they're the ones that are there. They're the folks that are known to have their meetings. And some of them are well attended, and I've been to some that, you know, you get maybe a handful of people. But I think that would be get the information out to neighborhood associations and let them run with the ball and have them, you know, be part of the solution as well. So.
Absolutely. I like that idea. And I believe we have a map or a list of all the neighborhood associations. I think we have a map and a list in one of these tabs here. Tab 4. Behind the maps, behind the city maps, at the end of tab 4, we have a map of each ward and its registered neighborhood associations. And some of them came out in 2022 and said, you know, I'm here on behalf of, I'm the president of my neighborhood association. Yeah. But I think the city has a way of distributing information to every neighborhood association Not sure exactly how that works, but I believe that is a capability. We could have them, you know, any kind of redistricting related thing, we could say, please send this out to all the neighborhood associations.
I think the question would be then, what do you do with neighborhoods that don't have neighborhood associations? Yeah,
that's harder. And that's important, though, because you don't want to ignore, you know, large swaths of the map, obviously. So that's something we could brainstorm. That's a trickier one. I think fundamentally, oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I think part of the involvement and in to listening to what Vanessa was saying is, I also learned that, and I think I said this last time, even though the bigger picture was always in front of me, the greater good of more representation, more fairness, more voice, I did learn that there were decisions that a commission could do specific to parks or streets, iconic things that people really felt that they couldn't live without. And that was really hard because sometimes you were like, well, but where else do we take that precinct? You know, it's the one. But I also feel like an effort like this going forward doesn't have to be only theoretical, you know, and like, oh, the greater good is there. It could also say, well, it's actually a problem because we have two competing goals and we think your goal is important too, which is we know that you're attached to that park. We know, or specifically in between 1 and 5, 1 and 3 was the freeway, right?
Yeah.
People were really sensitive about that. And I think that's a legitimate thing, you know, because freeways have been imposed on people. So why would people now have to be the benevolent ones and say, oh, yeah, it's okay. It doesn't really matter to me that it's the freeway all the way across when they were the ones originally that were affected and nobody asked, you know. So I also think that listening to the community, I heard that too. And it didn't have to be one or the other. Sometimes it was then like, okay, well then where do we find another 5,000 people to move? You know, if it's not that. Yeah, that's a problem, but it shouldn't be presented only as an opposition. Like, oh, you're opposing something because you're stubborn. No, I think people had affection for some areas and some iconic places. Yeah, culture of those neighborhoods.
I'll just point out, we do now have on the screen the map of total registered voters in each ward. And at a glance, it looks like it is more divided. The MPD of that would be higher than our actual MPD, which is, to Mr. Jaramillo's point, kind of, you know, potentially something to look at. If we've got certain wards have lower percentages of registered voters, then, you know, make of that what you will. I'm not quite sure what to do with that, but it does look like there's a, like, look at 5 versus 2. Those have pretty similar total populations. I need to pull up the numbers, but the number of registered voters is like 40-something% higher in 2 than it is in 5. So I bet the MPD of that would be much higher. So that, you know, hypothetically could be something we put in our letter and say, we think you should consider this as well. I, you know, again, I'm off the top of my head, I'm not quite sure what to do with that, but certainly worth thinking about. I think so. Well, I'll just also mention, I think I said this last time, but in 2022, we sort of tried to do rough proportionality and create a third majority minority ward, which would be Ward 3. And what we found is that you have to do a lot of movement, and there was a large amount of total disruption, and it was sort of in a clockwise direction where to get to make Ward 3 majority minority, you had to take minorities out of Ward 1 and put them. Do I have a map here? Where's the big map of everything? So you had to take minorities out of Ward 1 and move them into Ward 3. That makes Ward 3 majority minority, but then it messes up the total population because Ward 1 was already too small, and taking people out of Ward 1 made it even smaller. So to fix that, the only other, you can move from 6 into 1, which I believe we did a little bit in our final redistricting. But one of the reasons that's challenging is that the people we tried to move were very, very upset. And so we ended up cleverly splitting one of the wards where half of the western half of the ward was seemingly fine with it, and the eastern half was furious at the idea. So we just split it in half, moved the west into Ward 1. And that helped bring down the NPD, because now Ward 1 was a little bit bigger. And again, the problem was that Ward 1 was the smallest in our whole city. But again, back to the rough proportionality. So if you move minorities from 1 to 3, you create a third majority minority ward in 3, but now you have to backfill 1 or else your NPD goes up too high because Ward 1 is too small. There's not a whole lot you can do moving 6 into 1. So all you can really do is move 5 into 1. Now, these border precincts, some of them were also upset and not willing to move. We did end up moving one of them, I think 47, we did end up moving. They weren't thrilled with that, but we had to do something to get the NPD down. So we did move them. But if you wanted to do rough proportionality, again, you're moving a lot more people out of one. So you'd have to move a lot more from 5 into 1. And they'll be upset about that, but also that makes 5 a little bit too small. So now you have to bring people from 4 into 5. And you just, it ends up being sort of a clockwise motion. I think, I don't remember all the details, but there was like a lot of movement happening. And so everyone was mad, and we just decided we couldn't try to do that, especially in just a couple of months. I mean, a large percentage of the comments we got in 2022 were just like, how can you try to ram this through in 2 months? You know, you put out a map and then 3 days later you have a public hearing. People were mad about that. I think we were all kind of frustrated with that too. We had no choice as far as the public hearings. You know, we only had a couple months to do all this, but we felt sympathy with the public in that sense. But that said, even if we had a year to do it, all the groups on the border of 5 moving into 1 that didn't want to move, and the groups that were on the border of 1 and 3 that didn't want to move, and then, you know, potentially 6 to 1, like, we'd be upsetting a lot of people. So my personal view in 2022 was that, you know, we're a democracy, we should do what the people want and do that. But I do understand the other perspective, the greater good. Like, if you know, maybe down the road it would actually end up being better for the city. You know, the whole, like, you have to break an egg to make an omelet type of thing. Like, I understand that in theory. It's a, you know, there's some logic to that, but I don't know. I just want to, like, make sure we're on the same page about this. Like, there's nothing that will change in 2028 where we can do this in a way that, like, won't make everyone furious. So we can do as much community education as we want, and I think we should, and I'll support that wholeheartedly. But fundamentally, we have to kind of come to grips with that, unless we can think of some other clever outcome, like create a seventh ward or something, which would require a change to the city charter and require a vote of the people, not just the city council. So that's harder, you know, easy for us to recommend that, but that's a heavy lift. You know, I'm open to other ideas, but I just want to, you know, all of our options are tricky here.
Yeah, thank you for that, Ed. I think that your recounting of that was on point. It's exactly what happened. But I do believe that the time compression was probably even worse, because the only chance people had to talk to us was in anger. And we didn't have the freedom to say, and we were doing this late because I remember it was cold. I remember what I was wearing at those things. And I'm like, I'm wearing my linen now. And then it's like, back then I was just like bundled up. So I don't know if it's the weather or it was just like we were doing it like close to December, right? But we didn't have a choice to say to people, okay, we hear you. You're upset. You know what? Come back next week and let's work together on a different alternative. You go home, you take the map, you guys talk about it and bring us some ideas. We just didn't have that freedom. So we were like the authority, you know? And well, this is what we're going to do. And they were, so I think that issue, even though it's always going to be messy, and that's what democracy is, it's messy, but the time compression put us on the seat of being like, okay, they're going to do what they're going to do. They don't care. We don't have it. And we didn't have that option to say, okay, that's really complicated, but why don't you help us, give us some ideas? Because this is what the objective is. Instead, we were vilified. Like, you are just trying to break my neighborhood, you know? And it's like, well, could you hear me out that I'm not? But we need time for that trust to grow. And we just didn't have it. So maybe, even though it's always going to be imperfect, our recommendation next week can really stress that. You just, because it's so contentious and you have these other objectives, you want people to come along with you, mayor and council, you need to do it months and months in advance and start playing with those maps so that they become themselves some sort of a democratic platform where people can say, what about this? And then we go like, oh, okay, that's interesting. What about that? You know, like, we just, that's also democracy, the opportunity to have deliberation and play with the numbers. It's not just like, oh, well, you don't get it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I think a chance to engage and not just try to push something through. I think we probably all agree.
So is it possible to have us or the commission meet in 25, 26, 27, and be pushing the education and then inviting commentary during those annual meetings? And so that, and part of that examination would be, where's the development happening? What's happening with the population growth? And that way, maybe by the time we get to the next redistricting, people will be more informed and have an understanding of how things have changed between now and 2028.
Absolutely. I think waiting until 2028 would be like the first mistake, right? Like, we should start at least a year early, but why not 3 years early, right? You could have, not that we have to meet every month for 3 years, but yeah, or just, yeah, twice a year, just some, yeah, so that it's out there in the public. Yeah. I think it's possible that some people are inherently skeptical of redistricting because of gerrymandering, right? You look at some state maps and they have all these crazy, like, tiny slivers of district just to get like a slim piece of the big city so that the whole ward is whatever, or the whole district is Democratic or Republican. And I'm happy to say this doesn't, I don't think we have that problem. We have some problems, but this doesn't look to me that it was drawn in some like nefarious way to capture slivers of population centers. I think the packing may be we just got the history lesson. It looks like, you know, Ward 1 has been the West Side for forever. So anyway, I'm glad that we don't have to deal with gerrymandering issues, but that could be a cause of people wondering about redistricting. Whenever you hear about that, my mind immediately goes to gerrymandering and like watching for suspicious shapes, you know. So having more public engagement could certainly help with the openness. I think that's a common theme of what we're all saying. We want openness, we want community engagement for a significant amount of time. But we should think about what exactly would that look like. You mentioned maybe annual, but our letter could be as specific as we want. We can say we think this exact committee should extend beyond December and go into future years. We can say make a new committee or a task force or start the 2028 redistricting committee at least 1 year early. Or like we can suggest anything we want. So I think this is a good chance to brainstorm some possibilities. I don't think I have a super strong preference as far as like exactly how to do this, but some version of it seems like a good idea. Right, so that's every 2 years, but in the odd years, right? So 2025 and 7, there'll be two more between now and the next redistricting.
And I think that one of the other things that is hidden is that fear that you're playing like identity politics in a crass way, like saying if I get a representative of that same race or ethnicity, they're going to speak for me, which is also not necessarily true at all. But how do you account for that variance? So, you know, like I'm Hispanic, I live on District 3, you know, on this commission, I'm representing the mayor, but I live in District 3. And then I see, you know, minority in District 3, almost 44%, as opposed to, you know, District 1 or 5. But the interesting thing about that, if I use myself as an example, is a lot of my social relationships are in District 1 and 5, culturally. So in a lot of ways, in District 3, as a Hispanic, it doesn't mean that I can't vote for the person that I believe represents my best interest in, you know, whether they're Hispanic or not. But it does mean, brings us back to that question of the jurisdiction, you know, like what are my alliances, what you were talking about. So in a lot of ways, from one point of view, and that would just be very, very much one point of view, I could say that I am underrepresented on my ward in relationship to my community values and interests and alliances, you know? You could argue that. On the other hand, you could say, oh, but your council member represents you fine, you know, just fine. So, and then is the economics, because District 3 has a lot of poor people, regardless of whether they're minority or not, high poverty area, you know? And then I live probably in one of the better off, the socioeconomic of that district, but that doesn't mean that ethnicity dictates the alliance that I have with the rest of those neighborhoods around me, you know? So it's all very, very fair, confusing to people, and the fear of that being put in that little box. But if you think about it from the other point of view of representation, then it's like, okay, I shop in the South Side. I have friends who live on the West Side, you know? So, yeah, I'm sort of like floating in District 3 without my people. That would be one argument, right? But that wouldn't be the whole truth.
I mean, it's 44%. It's like pretty close to split evenly, right?
Well, but it's not 70%.
It's 56% non-minority. So 56% white alone and 44% minority in Ward 3. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not exactly 50-50, but it is the closest ward that we have. And I appreciate the point you made. You know, it's not always going to be the case that people vote for someone of their own race, right? Like the city of Tucson has a minority population of 42.2%, but we elected Regina Romero as our mayor, so which is great. I actually was involved in her campaign, so you know, that's I was very pleased with that. But you know, it's not that we always end up electing people of the whichever, you know, race has the most voters. Thankfully, I'm glad that's not how it works. Granted, sometimes that is how it works in different places, but not necessarily.
And then I know that 47 was moved. What other, off the top of your head, from Ward 5 to Ward 1? Is that a curiosity? Because I know you said 47, but...
that may have been the only one.
Let me check. Yeah.
We also moved 244
okay.
from Ward 5 to Ward 1.
Those exactly were the neighbors and businesses I was talking to, 47.
Oh, interesting. So, yeah, 47. That's
like, oh, yeah, that was.
That's right near South Tucson, right?
Thank you.
I remember there were some people that didn't want to move. And we, you know, we suggested a couple of maps. That was the one that mayor and council chose, but I would say relatively speaking in terms of like the number of people who came out, which is not a perfect metric by any means, but that was less of a hot button precinct than like several others that we saw. Okay, so let's see, 6:20. What time are we supposed to? I think we wanted to wrap by between 6:30 and 7. Although I think, was it Trey that was the one who needed to leave at 6:30? So we may have a bit of time, but we can try to move towards a conclusion here if people are ready. I mean, I do want to think about what we want to recommend. We can try to decide this at the next meeting. Yes, a week from today. Correct. But we could start having a little talk about it right now so that we're not just coming up with it on the spot next week. So what do we want to recommend to mayor and council? It seems like the one we all like feel pretty strongly about and agree on is we should start earlier than a couple months before the deadline. Are there any other, so then there's kind of two things in my head. One is, are there other major categories of feedback we want to give aside from logistics and timeline? So that's one question. The other question would be, you know, what should we recommend? We should probably say something more than just like start early. I say that because we said that last time. We told them to start a year early. And yeah. 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 I like 2026 because the odd numbered years are the elections and people might, in fact, I believe in the history lesson we received today, people were very upset about moving right before a primary election. So if we start in an even numbered year, that would minimize any perceptions that we're scheming prior to an election, because I don't think that is our intention, but in terms of public perception, we want to avoid causing a misperception. So I like the 2026 number. That gives us two full years, should be plenty of time, and it's not close to an election. Would we want to have them convene the redistricting committee or some kind of a task force? Another thing to think about is, do we, this exact group of people, want to continue, or do we want to disband in December and let them choose new people? I think we all signed up with the understanding that this was a short-term commitment, so I think we probably don't want to just extend our own thing here by years, but something to think about. Yeah.
I think this is the perfect place if we were to make like a task force where we're able to invite the community to be part of the process and where, like, you know, folks are, will be like, you know, a place of empowerment. Yeah. So maybe recommending, while it would be great that the same redistricting folks be part of it, I think that's where lies an opportunity to empower the community, to have them in the process.
I really like that idea because, partially because the redistricting advisory committee as an official City of Tucson committee, I think, is not really able to engage the public in a really open back and forth way. Like, we can have call to the audience, but you may recall in our first day of this cycle, we were told that we're not supposed to respond directly to the public and that we can't have, you know, members of the public like sitting with us for the study session, right? So a task force could be set up in a way that doesn't have those restrictions. Yeah. Do we want to recommend like a particular makeup of the task force? Like, who would it be a similar thing where each member picks one representative or something else? Yeah, that's fair. That's true. Yeah.
More than one from different wards.
Yeah. Should we try to say like an equal number from each ward? Like, for example, if one, let's say one ward is especially interested in redistricting and they picked 20 people and everyone else picked one person. Yeah, like maybe we should say like the same number in each ward so that each ward is equally represented in the process, or something like that. I don't know. I haven't really thought this through, so I'm just trying to think of possible ways this could criticize.
Well, I think it being a task force, it can be larger. It can also have like, there could be some paid facilitator or a consultant or somebody. Like, it could be the university or it could be somebody, you know, it could just be somebody who's a real facilitator of dialogue, of the information that is more neutral, but that is also sort of informed. That person could have a small budget. We're not talking like a large contract or something big, but somebody that is able to have some speakers maybe come for some presentations. It'd be nice to have somebody sit in that task where it's like, what is rough proportionality? What was the case that brought it about? You know, like a little bit of storytelling with consultants and things like that. So I would think that we want to say something about some funded resources to conduct the affairs of that task force, whatever that is, in facilitation, dialogue, deliberation.
And the fund would come from the city? Or, okay. Yeah. Okay, so we've got a good formulation of a plan here. So, yeah. Where are you going? It could be, yeah, like pick a community center in each ward and do a listening session / presentation type of thing at each one and have.
Because you have so much time, you could even encourage mayor and council to, part of that task force is to convene a redistricting forum, you know, like a one day where people study, hear presentations, PowerPoints, getting smaller groups. I mean, there's all kinds of interesting things that can be done with that. It's just whether that, who's going to do it, you know, somebody has to be given that job. And, okay. Because I think with the city, with the staff, I think they have a lot of the data and they can answer, but they're not, I don't think it's fair for city staff to have to carry, be a community builder, facilitator, you know, just play that role. I think that's somebody who can just play that independent role of almost like an ombudsperson or something. That's not the right term, but you know what I mean. Someone who's.
I think the city, what about the counselors themselves? Like, not to do all that work, but to attend the meeting and hear what people have to say. You know, I mean, we've made two changes to the redistricting advisory committee guidelines in the last two sessions, right? One this year and one the previous time. They could make more changes if they want to, if they hear certain things from the public, or I don't know. That's something I would hope that they're involved in some capacity. But I think, you know, I'm not sure we can like force them to do that, but it would be nice if they were there. Oh? Hmm. I see your point. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I want to make sure the person is neutral. I'm nervous that this could turn into a, like, we're giving a PowerPoint presentation about why we insist that we're going to move all your wards, all your boundaries around, and that, you know, Right, exactly. So I would want the facilitator to be both, you know, kind of listening too, right? I don't want this to turn into like, okay, great, we have 2 years to like try to convince everybody that they shouldn't be mad about something that's bad for them, right? Like, or we're gonna try to, I mean, if there is a case to be made that this is good for the city as a whole, so we should make that case, people should make the case, but I want to make sure this doesn't turn into like a, here's a paid consultant whose job is to convince everyone that it's not a big deal if they lose access to the ability to vote for the council member who controls their parks budget, right? Or whatever it is. Like, My preference would be for it to be more like the other way. Listen to the people, consolidate what the people want, and tell the council the will of the people so they can vote. Right? To me, that's kind of how a democracy ideally would work. So that would be, you know, just a thought.
True, except that if we put up for a vote, if people should stop at red lights and slow down and stop at stop signs, then they may vote that they don't want to. So a democracy is also framing what is in the... I'm not disagreeing with you, Ed. I'm just saying it's both. It's listening to the people, and it's also guiding the people to see what is the greater good than the interest of just you wanting to speak through that light because you are late for your job. Yeah, but you're putting other people at risk. So I think it's a really good balance to have that kind of dialogue. But I also think, and this speaks to the attorney's office, this is almost like foolproof because there are other considerations. Like if the MPD remains low and there's no compelling reason, if the population change, then that group may continue to study until the year, you know, because that's also really on the table for them. And if the education is education, but at the end of the day, it's like, well, you know, you're under 10%. There's no reason to disrupt anything. Nobody's like having any major issues of, you know, harm that is being. So that still is safeguard is there. The same other principles of one person, one vote, the contiguous things, you can't completely like say, oh, well, now district one is going to be this and then it's going to go like this and it's going to be on the east side and the west side and it's going to be all, you know, that would be a violation. So I think there's enough safeguards to the process being as open and deliberative as possible because people will always come back to these other guidelines and they may not need to do the way that Tucson's population is changing. But to your point, we don't know what that's going to look like in 2 years, 3 years, you know? Maybe downtown becomes our big new point of contention, right? Or maybe there's some other hotspot. We don't know that. And in 4 years, a lot can change. In this last 4 years, a lot has changed.
I think it's unlikely that in 2028, the MPD will be above 10%. I think we did a good job of not just getting it slightly below, but way below in 2022. Go ahead. Yeah. So unless there's like pretty substantial population shifts, I would guess that 2028 will have the same decision to make, and ultimately mayor and council will just have to decide, right? They can still redistrict even if the MPD is below 10%. This time they decided that they weren't going to. Next time we'll see, you know. But I hadn't really thought of that until you mentioned it, but it is possible, maybe even likely, that we won't need to redistrict or we won't even be asked to redistrict until 2032 or 2036. Who knows how long it'll take our great work in 2022 to be unraveled by population shifts. But it could last a while. We talked about that last time. We talked about, do we want to kick the can down the road and just make a quick fix, or do we want to, we by splitting precinct 46, I think, we made good progress there. Yeah.
I think another form of empowerment is maybe revisiting some of the folks who came back here who were impacted, like 47, and saying, like, you know, a year later, where are you at now? How do you feel about that? Like, as a person now who was moved, right? And what can we learn from that experience, right, for future folks? And also, you know, uplift their stories as well. Because those might be your biggest advocates 2032. You know, I'm just saying, I think the time is now to keep this, I don't think people need to forget about redistricting. I think that should just be another vocabulary word that we all know when it comes to, you know, Tucson empowerment, right? And it may be formatted that way, right? And how we continue to have folks use that term. But I do believe that, that's a point where we can uplift somebody's story as well as learn.
I really like that idea of bringing in the same people who were opposing it last time. We had to do it anyway. Did things go as badly as they expected, or was it actually not that big of a deal, or was it good? You know, I really like that idea. Follow up on how it went last time. Okay, well, we are getting a little bit late in the evening, so we don't have to make any votes right now. But I guess we should just kind of think and, you know, talk to your council member if you'd like to, and think about what kind of process we want to recommend next time. The meeting is Monday, a week from today, at, I believe, the same time, 5 p.m. Yes, that's correct, 5 p.m.
Will we draft something there that day, or are we able to just sort of provide general ideas and you draft it, or how does that work?
We can do it either way. We can take your input next week, draft something that we bring back on October 7th that you finalize, because we will want you to sign it. So that might be the easiest thing, is to let us start the draft next week with your input and then finalize it on the 7th.
I think that's probably the right way. That's how we did it last time, except the meetings were like a day apart. And you guys had to write the letter, I think, literally overnight. So this time you'll have a week. That'll be much, much easier. Okay. So that's future agenda items. Well, next week we'll just exclusively focus on the letter. I don't think we need to put call to the audience on the agenda, but I'm open to if you guys think we should. Do you mean you think we should, or you think we don't need it? Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, she said.
Yeah, I think we need it. I think any chance that the public has the chance to talk to us, we should leave the door open.
Yeah, that's true. I agree with that. I was going to say, if people show up, we could just add it as an impromptu thing on the agenda. But now that you mention it, if someone were to check the agenda and see if they wanted to come and they saw that there is no call to the audience, they might be less likely to come. So I think you're right. Let's put it on the agenda with the knowledge that there's a chance that it'll be a quick one. Okay, so future agenda items, we'll do pretty much the exact same as today's agenda, but item 4 will be drafting the letter, or voting on what clauses we want in that letter. Okay, well, I think we're about ready to adjourn. Are there any other thoughts? We do have a few more minutes if anyone has any final thoughts. Staff, anything we should be aware of?
No, just next week when you're discussing your recommendation, if you can make sure you speak into your microphone so that we could get everything on the recording, that will really help us out a lot. Just a housekeeping item. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you. And I'll try to remember to remind everyone, but if I forget, please do remind us at that. Like, do we have to be like right up there, or?
No, but if you're in the vicinity and you'll hear the little bit of feedback, you'll know that the sound system is picking you up.
Got it. So probably about like this far away. I think that'll work. Okay, great. Well, we'll call the meeting to adjournment. Thank you all so much. Great discussion.
Thank you.
Did you look at those maps then, like from the 50s? So that's the thing is, on every 10 evidence that the density of that piece belongs to the the maps really did stable, with the exception of like annexations and little changes, like from the late 90s to date. Then you look at the maps and there's stick up for annexations. Very little change. Yeah, it might be the matter of time. You have public parks going in and historical areas and you've been there for 20 years.
That time, and
so that I remember something. Even retail business. You know, I've been shopping
but that perception was so real, right?
This was my community.